about Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Dennis Isbister, and he'll be answering your most important questions on Pyramid Lake cutthroats. The show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Dennis a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address in the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback in about 48 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted. Is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Dennis Isbister about Pyramid Lake cutthroats. Watermaster is dedicated to providing their customers with the highest quality inflatables on the market, as well as unbeatable customer service and product support. They are best known for their signature products, the Watermaster Grizzly and Kodiak rafts. These rafts are lightweight, compact, durable, versatile, and safe. The Watermaster rafts are everything your personal watercraft should be. They have been used by anglers and hunters all over the world for over 15 years, including Dave Whitlock, one of the fly fishing's greatest innovators. Dave said, "With my Watermaster, I can enjoy more fishing per hour than any other method I have ever tried. After 2.5 years of testing 15 models of kickboats, I'm convinced that the Watermaster is the ultimate personal flotation craft for warm and cold water fly fishing." Visit Watermaster today and take a look at, as Dave Whitlock put it, the ultimate personal flotation craft. Go to www.bigskyinflatables.com. That's www.bigskyinflatables.com. Before we introduce Dennis, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and look for that link under Dennis's section that says click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of Dennis's DVD from his show, Wild Fish, Wild Places, Unlocking the Secrets of Pyramid Lake. So courtesy of Dennis Isbister, we'll be giving that away. Now, to win that, you're going to have to be the first person to answer a question we ask at the end of the show. That question is going to be something that Dennis and I talk about during the show. You got to submit your answer along with your name and your location in the text box on our homepage. It's the same text box that you can ask questions in during the show. So use that text box, send in your answer, and if you're the first person to answer that question correctly, then you'll get a copy of Dennis's Unlocking the Secrets of Pyramid Lake DVD. Our guest tonight is Dennis Isbister. Dennis was born in Fallon, Nevada, and at a young age he was introduced to the outdoors by his grandfather. Every summer they would travel throughout the high desert of northern Nevada, Oregon, and Washington in search of big fish. Who would have known these leisurely summer fishing trips would become the foundation of the fish, adventure fishing to come? Wild Fish, Wild Places was started in 2010 with the idea that the fishing world needed more out-of-fishing programs. So he dedicated time and effort into finding some of the most interesting places and stories and monster fish to highlight in his shows. Wild Fish and Wild Places was nominated for Best Fishing Show its second year and has been growing presence throughout the world ever since. Well, Dennis, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, you know, the story about your grandfather introducing you to fishing and getting you going, it's kind of like my first grandson is going to be two the beginning of September, and I'm just chomping at the bit to get him out there and do what your grandfather did and, you know, what my grandmother and father did.
It's a pretty common story. Yeah, it's a pretty common story we get, the, you know, mentors and people helping and getting you going. And Yeah, it definitely was that was the case for me. We spent a lot of time hunting and fishing together, and, you know, it became a passion of mine and led me down the path that I'm in today.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I still remember I was on, when I was a, probably 10, 11, 12 years old or something, and we were floating on the Menominee River up in the border of Michigan, upper UP and Wisconsin. My grandfather was in the boat, and he opened one of the jars of those garlic-smelling marshmallows that, you know, you bake. And
yep.
He kept a straight face, and he says, "These are really good, guys. You should try them." And he popped one in his mouth. And he kept a straight face. I couldn't believe it. And we're like, our jaws were dropped wide open, and our eyes were wide. Like, you got to be kidding me.
Oh, man.
And then you didn't try it, huh? No, oh, no. And then about 30 seconds later, you saw him go, by the boat. So anyway,
terrible.
Fond memories of Grandpa, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, so. Well, tonight we've got Pyramid Lake, which is like in your backyard up there.
Yeah, pretty much an hour away. It's, you know, what I consider to be my home lake. I grew up fishing it and, you know, spend a lot of days fishing Pyramid Lake, you know, throughout the season. And it's close to home, and we do a lot of promotional stuff on Pyramid Lake as well as instructional, like the DVD we were talking about earlier. We do a lot of instructional and prototype work for different sponsors, and you know, lure colors and lure designs and fly colors and fly designs and all kinds of stuff. So yeah, we spend a lot of time out there for sure.
Like a test bed up there.
Yeah, that's right.
Kinds of gear, yeah. So tell everybody, we do have an international audience, so tell everybody where really, you know, exactly Pyramid Lake is in the world.
So Pyramid Lake is in northern Nevada, and it's about 40 miles north of Reno, Nevada. So it's pretty easy place to get to, but it is also on an Indian reservation, so it makes it a little bit remote, I guess. It's easy to get to, but there's not a lot of facilities once you get out there. It's been preserved pretty well for that reason.
Now, first of all, why is it called Pyramid Lake?
Pyramid Lake got its name in 1844. John C. Fremont was the first one to discover the lake and actually map it. And there was a giant pyramid-shaped rock on the eastern shore that sticks out up out of the water. It's huge, looks just like a pyramid, and that's where it got its name.
Wow. And I suppose the American Indians there, Native Americans, have another name for it. Do you know what that might
they
be?
Call it Pyramid Lake as well, as far as I know.
Oh, they do.
They just went with it, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, they.
So, go ahead.
When Fremont discovered it, there are little colonies of Indians around the whole lake, and they actually fed him the giant trout out of the lake. And he had just come down from Oregon, and he documented the fish as being more tasty than the salmon that he had up in Oregon.
Wow. Well, Pyramid Lake has had some history, right? I mean, his ups and downs and so forth. Can you tell us a little bit about?
Yeah, for sure. So when Fremont discovered it, the word started getting out about these giant cutthroat trout that lived in the lake. It's the home to the world record cutthroat trout of 43 pounds. And what was going on is the silver and gold rush in Nevada was happening. And so a couple of different things. They started commercial fishing the lake. They actually put the railroad directly into the lake so they could commercial fish, dump the fish onto the railway, and send it up to the miners to sell to them so they could eat. And then a thing called the Newlands Project started happening where they were going to irrigate the valley, which is where I live. So they put some dams, various dams along the river to divert water to flood irrigate and make the desert bloom, as they say. And so what happened was they were getting taken out of there commercially in such a big rate, plus their
spawning grounds were all basically destroyed. They couldn't get back up to Tahoe to spawn. So the Truckee River comes out of Tahoe and it feeds Pyramid Lake. And Pyramid Lake is what's known as like a caustic lake. There's inflow but no outflow. So the only way the water gets out is by evaporation, which also makes it have a high salinity level. So there's only a few species of fish that can actually live in the lake, and the cutthroat trout being the native and being one of them. So what happens is over the course of the next 100 years is we lose the fish. They become what they thought was extinct, and they start trying to figure out what kind of fish will live in here, try to replant different things. And so the Nevada Division of Wildlife had the lake. They were responsible for the stocking of the lake for quite a few years. They had cutbows and different species of fish in there. Well, then the Paiute Shoshone tribe took it back over and got rid of everything in there except what was native, which was the Lahontan cutthroat trout and the Kuiui, which is spelled C-U-I-U-I, or the Kuiui, which is an endangered species, and then the Tui chub, which is the endemic bait fish for the Great Basin. And so the tribe kept trying to figure out a fish to go back in this lake, and they found what was known as the Summit Lake strain of Lahontan cutthroats, and it came from a little place called Summit Lake. Well, these fish were pretty uninteresting, to be honest. They didn't fight hard. They liked really cold water. They weren't, you know, it'd get warm and they'd go deep immediately. They just didn't get very big. You know, 10, 12 pounder was a bit, really big fish. And about 6-7 years ago, somebody found a Lahontan cutthroat at a place called Pilot Peak, which is out on the Utah border. And they guessed that it was a close relative to the old strain that was in the lake. They did some DNA testing on some old fish mounts, and they found out that the fish was almost identical. So they started with these fish that they found and started reproducing them in the lake. And all of a sudden, we end up with a Pilot Peak strain of Lahontan cutthroat that is growing a half an inch a month on average, getting huge. We caught a 20-pounder last year that was 5 years old. And
wow.
So it's all of a sudden these fish, they're eating more. They're more aggressive. They don't mind the warm water, so the fishing's better throughout the year. And they're just a lot better fish, and they're doing really well. And the tribe and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is responsible for, you know, taking care of the lake. They reproduce the fish. They milk the fish. They rear, you know, them till they're, I think they plant them when they're about 8 inches long, so they keep them for a year, and then they dump them back in the lake. And it's been a very, very successful program to basically bring this lake back from what it once was. And now, like I said, I mean, when I was a kid, a 10-pound fish was a big deal, and now it doesn't even turn an eyebrow hardly. You know, if nobody even cares. I mean, you got to catch a 20-pounder really to get any feedback from somebody.
Wow, that's pretty incredible.
It's an incredible story how, you know, bringing it back. And what they figured happened is that when they started going extinct, they were putting them on rail cars and putting them in different bodies of water just to see if they would survive, and they ended up surviving out there.
So they don't actually reproduce naturally in the lake or the Truckee?
No, they don't. They have documented some fish running back up the lake or up the river and spawning, I think, to some degree successful, but not a big enough degree. So they have seen, like I heard, I think it was in the paper, that they documented some 30-pounders in the river successfully spawning 2 years ago. So I know that there's some clubs around, like the Truckee River Fly Fishing Club, and they got a whole bunch of cutthroats, and they planted them up high in the river system to see if they would make it and, you know, come back year after year. So there's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of positive, you know, hard work from people. But the way they do it now is there's two facilities, one up the river system just a little ways called Marble Bluff, and one on the lake which we'll come back to later on in our conversation, at a place called The Net. And then what they do is they run fresh water, fresh spring water, into the lake, and they've got a concrete raceway up to some stations, and they naturally, every year, they come back up this raceway, and they segregate them and milk them and, you know, do the whole process.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, Steve Bourne in Madison, Wisconsin, and Steve's actually been on our show as a guest as well. And he had written in, he said he seemed to remember that they'd established some kind of fish passage so they could get up river from the Truckee Delta or something. There were some obstructions or something in the river there, right?
Yeah, they built a fish ladder, but it's not the, you know, it wasn't a fix-all, you know, end-all fix-all or whatever you call it. It wasn't really what they needed. They need more. There's like six dams, and they put one, you know, to go around it or whatever. So,
yeah.
I think, like I said, I think people are trying to work on it, but, you know, the other problem is the Truckee's been real low the last few years, too. We've had a bit bad drought up until this year.
Everywhere in California, right?
Yeah, California and Nevada's been terrible for the last, like, 3 years. This year we finally got some snow, thank goodness.
Yeah, yeah. So you had said, you know, a 20-pounder hardly turns a head up there. What is considered an average Manhattan cutthroat, and what's a trophy in size?
You know, I would say an average. If you come here and fish, you know, for three, I always tell everybody to come here for 3 days at the minimum, because these big fish don't always bite every day. They bite, you know, every couple days, it seems like, with the weather and different things. But I would say that you would catch, you're gonna catch a lot of like 5 to 6 pound trout, a lot, depending on the time of year, depending on, you know, what you're doing, the average is gonna change a little bit, but a 10-pounder is a nice fish. You know, any 10-pound trout's a big fish, no matter, I mean, it's just
wherever
a big fish.
Yeah.
Yeah, wherever you are. But you're not going to catch a 10-pounder, a pyramid, and, you know, take it in and show it off anywhere. It's going to take a 15, 18-pounder to really turn some heads, and it's very doable. You know, every day when the fly fishing is really, really hot, in the spring, every day for a couple months, somebody posts a picture of a 25 pounder.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we're just getting some huge fish out of there.
Yeah. Why do these cutthroats grow so big in this lake? Is it the strain of cutthroat or the lake or a combination of the two? What's going on there?
There's a combination of the two, for the best we can figure. The biologist friend of mine that used to work out there, we talk a lot, and he's an expert on cutthroat trout and pretty much an expert on Pyramid Lake as far as I'm concerned. But what happened was the new strain that came in definitely was a huge deal. But what also is happening is that we've got an explosion of tui chub over the last few years, which is their bait fish that they live on for most of the year. So the bait fish have done really well. Thus, the trout have done really well.
So they're feeding on a lot of bait fish. Not many midges, huh?
You know what they do, though? That's the thing. Certain times a year, they switch over. So, I mean, we can walk through the seasons if you want. We can step it out.
So, yeah, let's talk about that, because, you know, that was my next question was, can you fish it year-round?
Yeah, no, you can't. You cannot fish it between, so you can't fish it July, August, and September. It's closed to fishing. So basically it opens October 1st. It starts then, and what you see in the first 2 weeks in October is the tui chub have just gotten done spawning, and they're in giant balls of bait, giant bait balls that are two or three times the size of your boat. I mean, it's just huge. And so these cutthroat trout key in on all, it's just easy prey for them, and they'll be going through the balls of bait like tuna, whacking these things in October till about the third week in October. They're chasing big, you know, big stuff. So if you're going to fly fish it in October, you're going to want to bring, you know, some sort of float boat a float tube, a little paddle boat of some sort, or a big boat if you have it, and you're going to want a shooting head sinking line that moves fast, and you're going to want some really big, like white and, you know, white and green, white and brown minnow imitation, and you're going to want to strip them really fast because they're really, really aggressive that time of year, and they're looking for stuff to be moving.
Okay, so it starts in October and goes till when did you say?
It goes all the way until the end of June. So in November,
so hot months.
Yeah. So November, December starts cooling off, and you can start getting them on ladders pretty good, which, you know, is the only place I've ever fished in the world that incorporates construction equipment to fish. You know, you put ladders out on the ledge. And what you end up seeing, what you see at Pyramid Lake, is there's what I refer to as a primary ledge and a secondary ledge. The fly fishermen walk out to the primary ledge and stop and put a ladder up. And you can see it right in front of you dive off into the deep. And what happens, it goes from about 6 feet usually down to about, 10, 12 feet and then out to 20. And then there's usually a 20-foot ledge out on the farther end. Depending on where you're at the lake, the distance varies. So November, December, it gets a little colder and these fish start moving in, and you can catch them on, you know, various different things. And they will eat midges under indicators. They will eat, you know, there's a lot of bugs that are tied and patterns tied specific for Pyramid Lake. One of them called the popcorn beetle, my friend Doug Ouellette from, I can't remember his fly fishing company, but he designed a fly that's unique to Pyramid called the popcorn beetle, and it's chartreuse with a white tail and a white foam back, and it actually wiggles a little in the water, almost like a little flatfish or something, and there's a bug that kind of looks like that in the lake. You'll want to fish those on a sinking line, and as well as like chartreuse woolly buggers, black woolly buggers, white woolly buggers, and then balance leeches. That's all good that time of year.
I know we've got a question on the balance leech later on. We'll get into more, you know, tactics and talk about those. Are there season? And I noticed a lot of pictures of Pyramid Lake. I see guys with stocking caps on and big jackets. Must get pretty chilly up there.
It gets cold. I mean, you start talking December, January, February is when it gets really cold. Now, these fish make a migration around the lake and a counterclockwise rotation around the lake, and different times of year they move to different places. And starting in about the end of November to December and January, they find themselves in the sand on the south side of the lake and the southeast side, and it's cold. I mean, your eyelets are freezing. You have to dress up. And that's the time of year that you're going to fish all day for a couple fish. You're going to go all day and hope for a couple fish, but one of them, you know, you're probably, you know, if you're there with a couple buddies, you're going to catch a big fish. And if you spend some time, you're going to get one of those big boys, just a matter of time, that time of year. But you're not fishing for a lot of fish.
Yeah, and then as it starts to warm up, the fish move around some more?
Yeah, well, then it moves into the spawn. So then you start talking about March. They're starting to stage, so they're still eating pretty good, but they're moving into those traditional areas. And in March, they make a transition to bugs. March and April, boat fishing is terrible out there. I try to avoid it like the plague, trolling, because I fish a lot out of my boat too, trolling spoons and trolling flatfish and that kind of stuff, but they quit eating that stuff. They turn primarily to flies in March and April. And so they start eating little midges, and, you know, that's when I've had the best luck with the little wino, like wine-colored midges, with the copper heads, black midges. There's a whole different specific lineup of flies that people tie for out there that work really good.
What's happening after the spawn then?
So then the spawn comes in about April, usually about the third week in April, the fish start spawning. Then they start taking them back and dumping them back in the lake, and they, what happens after the spawn, obviously, they start eating everything in sight. They start staging in more traditional hunting areas. There's a few places around the lake that I love that time of year, and it gets really good. The bigger fish are a little harder to find that time of year, but you can go from catching, you know, two or three fish a day to catching 30 fish a day, which is a lot of fun too. I mean, you know, the last time I fly fished it, you know, I think we ended up landing 35 fish between two of us in a day. Wow. And, you know, lots of nice fish. One 10-pounder was probably the biggest. Like I said, the bigger fish are there. It's just they're not as easily, you know, fooled, I guess, that time of year.
So are those shoulder seasons, would you consider those the better seasons to fish, the fall and the
As a fly fisherman, I would say October and March and April is when the most popular time for fly fishing is. It's cold, you know, it's colder. They're moving into those shallow bays, but it's also the most crowded with fly fishing. So if you're going to go and you just want to go and have a chance at catching the biggest, you know, the biggest fish of your life, that's the best time to go, and that's why everybody's there.
Personally, we'll talk about the crowds in just a minute.
Yeah.
I want to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk about that.
Absolutely.
So when we return, we'll be talking more with Dennis Isbister about Pyramid Lake cutthroats. The Federation of Fly Fishers needs your support in its conservation projects at both the national and club level. They're addressing critical issues of importance to fly fishers. It is involved in the Mangrove Recovery Initiative in Florida and the Trout of the Desert Southwest Initiative to help the recovery of rare native trout, also the Endangered Fisheries Initiative, and is helping to prevent the introduction of harmful aquatic species to new waters with their Clean Angling Pledge. The Federation won a National Conservation Award for its efforts. To continue this great work on behalf of all fly fishers, the Federation needs to increase its membership. It needs more concerned anglers willing to join in support of such projects, and by doing so, give something back to the sport that has given so much to each of us. Join the Federation of Fly Fishers today and help support their fine work. For more information, go to the Federation website at fedflyfishers.org. That's fedflyfishers.org. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Dennis Isbister about Pyramid Lake cutthroats. If you'd like to ask Dennis a question, go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them on the show as possible. Okay, Dennis, I always ask my guests, you know, what's going on in your fly fishing world, and I know you're a busy man out there, so tell us a bit about what's keeping you so busy.
I've got the TV show Wild Fish, Wild Places, and we travel, you know, extensively around the world filming 13 new programs every year for the World Fishing Network. So that's what we've been in the middle. I was in Alaska for a week and then up in northern Saskatchewan chasing fish for the last couple weeks, actually. So we've been doing that. And then Adamsbilt Fishing, we've been, you know, working on new products for Adamsbilt and getting ready for the big ICAST show that everybody's excited for. And, you know, we got some new stuff we're going to unveil at ICAST that we're excited for. And you know, just getting ready for all that, the business end and then the filming end. And, you know, we're going to get back from ICAST and head up to Elko, Nevada and do a backpacking trip, film that. And then up to Alaska again. So it's just nonstop.
Now, is there, first of all, where do people find your Wild Fish, Wild Places show?
The World Fishing Network.
And
we're there every month or every week. They're playing us to some degree. So you can go to theworldfishingnetwork.com and find Wild Fish, Wild Places and see what our schedule is and take a look at it. We're playing last year's episodes now, so we got Columbia for the vampire fish and peacock bass and the Yukon and northern Saskatchewan and Argentina for trout and quite a few fun locations last year.
Okay. And do you have a website or anything where people can find out
more
about?
Yeah, you go to go check us out at wildfishwildplaces.com. And then, of course, you know, all the social media that surrounds that as well.
Okay, great. Terrific, terrific. Well, it sounds like you're having fun and plenty busy, that's for sure.
Yep, always. Always busy and always having fun. We're always going to some cool places and, making television shows, which is awesome as well.
Yeah. So, back Pyramid Lake, the questions are, does it get crowded up there? Obviously, with the attraction of the Lawton Cutthroat, you'd think there might be a lot of people. So, does it get crowded? If so, when's the best time to avoid the crowds?
Yes, it does get crowded. The opening week, you know, the first week or two of October are always insane. One of the problems with that being being the opener is that there's only one boat launch. So it is crazy, you know, crazy crowd at the boat launch and making it insane, which if you're a fly fisherman, most guys are fly fishing out of a pontoon boat or, you know, ladders or whatever, so it doesn't pose as big of a problem, but it still gets crowded in October. And then I would say March and April are the next two busiest times because that's when everybody wants to fly fish it. That's when it's good fly fishing. I mean, it's the best. And there's just a few really popular areas that everybody, you know, you go to a place, I told you we were talking earlier about the nets, and there's the south nets and the north nets, and that's where the fish run up the ladder there to get to spawn, and they stage in those two areas. And those places, you know, I've been down there. I try, I try not to go there because it's just, I don't like fishing with that many people. But, you know, sometimes there's 60, 70 ladders in a line along the beach.
Oh, goodness.
You know, there's lots of people. But I, you know, most of the time you can find fish in other places. There's, you know, they're in a few different other locations on, you know, you just have to go look for them. Sometimes it's not the case. I mean, I fished this year quite a few times fly fishing, and there was some days that I found them somewhere else and they were eaten and I was happy that I was gone away from the crowd, and then there was other days where they just weren't there and we didn't do very good, but the guys down at the next nets ripped them. So,
yeah,
you know, it's just a matter of that. But, you know, there's times of the year where, you know, like that November, December, January time frame when it's really cold and there's not a ton of people hitting the lake, you know. It's got to be pretty tough to be out here. You know what I mean? One of my favorite times to fly fish is May, you know, the end of May, 1st of June. And, you know, there's just not a lot of people fly fishing anymore. They go do other things, and it's still really good fishing.
Yeah, good. Okay. What kind of license do you need to fish there? Is it a Nevada license? Or
No Nevada license required. It is a... it is an Indian reservation, so all you need is a permit to fish from the tribe, which is, I think, $8 or $9 for the day. And I think it's about $100 for the season if you're going to fly fish it. If you're going to put a boat on it, you need a fishing license and a fishing license and, like, a boating permit or camping or something like that, you know.
Is that for float tubes, too, or just a...
Not a float tube, anything with a motor. If you put an electric motor or something on it, then you need a permit.
That kind of permit. Okay, okay.
Yeah, I mean, always check the regulations before you head out because they do change them. So just always check the regs before you go out there, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Is DB in Escondido, California asks, is the good fly fishing limited to a small stretch of the lake? You kind of just answered that, I suppose.
Not always. If you're willing to venture out and try some different places and get some good info, then you can get good fishing in other places, in other parts of the lake. Certain times of the year, like April, like that when they're really making a push towards the spawn, they do get pretty concentrated in the nets, that nets area, but the rest of the year, you can go find them other places, and it's not, you know, it's not bad. And there's such good info out there now that's readily available. I mean, almost day to day, somebody's posting, you know, Facebook, social media. You can call Crosby's Lodge if you're going to go out there. You know, you're going to go stay out there. You definitely want to get a hold of Crosby's Lodge and find out what's going on. They have a great place, you know, a great bar and restaurant and tackle shop and a place, you know, they got places to stay out there that are really handy, and they're usually on top of the info pretty good.
So, would you, I mean, we always talk about, you know, do you need a guide, do you not need a guide? Is this one of those places that you might be able to do it on your own, or?
Absolutely, yeah. We got people come out all the time. I mean, they shoot me a message, you know, if anybody out there is listening and they think they're going to come to Pyramid Lake and they want to try to do it yourself, you know, go find us on Facebook, you know, Dennis Isbister, either a public figure page or my personal page, or wildfishwildplaces.com and the Wildfish Wild Places Facebook page, and you can always get info. I mean, we're always on the fish. We always got some pretty good, you know, info. So if you're looking to do it yourself and come up, absolutely. I mean, you know, get, you know, let's talk about the gear a little bit. I think we're going to talk about that. You're going to want.
Yeah, one more question on the fish there, and then we'll jump into gear.
Yeah, no problem.
Dan in California, he said he heard that Pyramid Lake is high in mercury. Is it true? And if so,
you know what? I've never
is it to eat the fish.
Yeah, I've never heard the mercury thing out there. I mean, there's so many lakes around all over the place that I've dealt with where they say, you know, the fish have high mercury levels. Don't eat more than, you know, 75 a day or whatever the case. I haven't really heard anything about it. The limit, the slot limit is 2. You can only keep 2 fish out of there. So there's no way you're going to be able to eat enough fish out of there to where the mercury content's going to matter.
Yeah.
And they are good eating. If you like to eat some trout on the, you know, on the barbecue or over the fire, they're actually a really good fish to eat too.
Yeah, cool. And one other question about, are there any other trout species in the lake that you would target on a fly or any other fish?
Well, there's no other trout species. There's the Summit Lake strain of cutthroat and the Pilot Peak strain of cutthroat. So those are the 2 trout. But there's also a fish in there called a Sacramento perch, which they planted years and years and years ago, and they've done pretty well. So you can find, you can catch the Sacramento perch a little bit. Pretty spotty on a fly rod. If you're going to chase those, that's a whole other technique, and that's like a June fishery, like balance leeches, sinking lines right on the bottom, and you can target them. They actually are pretty big Sacramento perch, and they're good tasting too.
Okay, equipment. Rick Takahashi in Fort Collins, and Rick's been on our show too as a guest, and he wanted to know what type of equipment do you find most successful with regards to weights, rods, types of line, etc.
I always care. So I take an 8-weight, and that's what I fish is an 8-weight. The 8-weights are great for, you know, casting big stuff. If you're going to cast big streamers, if you're going to cast an indicator, you know, plus to handle the fish. If you hook into a 15, 20-pound fish, you definitely need an 8-weight, and that's the standard out there is an 8-weight. So an 8-weight, large arbor reel, and then I always have one with floating line and one with a shooting head and a sinking tip, a fast sinking tip to get down. And it'll change throughout the day sometimes, too, when you're fishing there. The other day, the last day I fished out there, it changed 4 times in one day. They wanted indicators and black midges at daylight, and then they wanted olive, you know, buggers stripped as fast as you could on a sinking line. So I definitely would take 8 weights with a floating line and one with a fast sinking tip with a shooting head is what I would use for fly fishing stuff. And then I like fluorocarbon leader because it sinks and it's tough. So I always use fluorocarbon leader anywhere from 10 to 20 pound. You can get away with pretty heavy stuff out there. They're not too leader shy. And then waders and boots, you know, just depending on the time of year, of course. I always use my breathables. Some guys use their duck hunting waders, which work great too. But definitely a heavy breathable, like, say, our Adamsville guide welder, 5-layer material. So they're definitely, you know, a little bit warmer than like a 3-layer material, we say. So you're going to want a heavier wader most of the year. You know, the boots don't really matter. Lug sole or felt doesn't really matter. And then if it's cold, definitely you want to wear some, like, heavy fleece pants and some big wader socks, a wading jacket, and, you know, you layer up underneath that is kind of the key.
Yeah.
And then the ladder situation, like we were talking about.
Let's hold up. Hold the ladder situation for a second. I got to take another break, and then we'll come back, and we'll tease them a bit about that. And
perfect.
All right. Housatonic River Outfitters offers the finest in fly fishing products in Connecticut and fly fishing guides on the Housatonic, Farmington, and other waters. You have the option of wade fishing trips or drifting the river with their guides. In addition to their spectacular trout fishing, they offer guided fly fishing trips and spin fishing trips for warm water species. Please tour their website at www.dryflies.com to view the fishing products and guide services they offer in Connecticut and Massachusetts. They were the first fly shop in Connecticut to offer drift boat guide services and have the largest established guide service in New England. To learn more about Housatonic River Outfitters, visit dryflies.com. That's dryflies.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Dennis Isbister about Pyramid Lake Cutthroats. If you'd like to ask Dennis a question, go to our homepage and use the Q&A text box there to send us your question, and we'll try to answer your question on the show as soon as possible. Okay, Dennis, before we talk about the ladder, what about boats? We're going back to boats. Do you need a boat, or it sounds like a lot of fishing is done from shore. So,
a lot of fishing is done from shore, absolutely. Those fish, like I was talking about earlier, there's like what I refer to as a primary ledge and a secondary ledge, and those fish will move in and out from each of those ledges depending on the time of day and the weather. So if you get a nasty day out there, which happens pretty often where you get wind and rain and whatever, or snow, whatever else is happening, those fish will push right up into that first ledge. You'll see those fish swimming in front of you. You know, they'll be swimming right on that ledge in front of you. So when it's like that, you don't need a boat. But sometimes when it's glassy conditions and sunny, it's nice to be able to get out, push out a little bit, and get out to that second ledge. A big boat is handy because you can go to the other side. And, you know, it's a big, big lake, and that's what I do sometimes. I take my big boat, I'll go across the lake, and I'll fly fish the other side, which you can't, you're not legally allowed to get out on the bank on the other side, but I'll anchor up my boat and fish on the other side or, like, drift slowly and strip big minnow patterns and stuff. So if you have access to a big boat, it's a good thing to bring with you. A lot of the times I go over there on, like, spotty weather days, and I'll take my ladder and my boat. And if we get over there and it's windy, I'll fly fish, and if it's nice, I'll get in my boat.
Any boat rental possibilities there? Or
I don't think so. I don't know for sure, but I'm pretty sure that there's no boat rentals. There, you know, there is guides, and there is some great guides on the lake, too. You know, Dave Stanley and Doug Ouellette, they do a, you know, they have a great operation out there. If you want to get a guide, some guys will go get a guide for the day just to learn what's going on and then fish on their own for a couple of days. And that's,
right.
You know,
yeah.
And
like many people do.
The guides in the boats, the guides in the boats more than likely will not be able to take you out fly fishing, I don't think. The guys that I know in the boats, you know, they just conventional fish, they troll and stuff.
Yeah.
But
So do you need a ladder?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's about three main ways that that work out there for getting a ladder, depending on, you know, how hardcore you want to be. The first way that's kind of the easiest is like a step stool, like a kitchen step stool. And in my DVD, it goes through, you know, all this stuff. And what people do is they'll take a U-bolt and they'll U-bolt wooden dowels across the legs so they don't sink into the sand very far. So you can take a little step stool, get out. And what the ladder does, it allows you to get up above the water, get out of the water when it's cold so you don't freeze to death. And, of course, you can see better and you can cast better when you're up out of the water. You know, standing chest deep in water trying to cast a fly rod just gets miserable after a while. So a 6-foot construction ladder, I would say, is probably the most popular for people that aren't, you know, diehards out there. Just a 6-foot, you know, Werner construction ladder, aluminum or fiberglass. The fiberglass ones work the best for me, just a little bit more stable. And, you know, you walk out to about, you know, belly button deep, and then you put the ladder down, and you push it down in the sand, and then you climb up on the rungs and cast. And then the third option, which is what I have, which is the absolute most comfortable and best way to fish out there, is custom-made ladders, aluminum. And so what they're an A-frame, like an A-frame ladder with a boat seat on top of them, and everybody has their own variations of building them. Crosby's has some for sale if you know if anybody's interested in getting some. And they have a welded platform on the front and a welded pieces on the back, so you walk up the back and you can step over to the front. You have a high, very safe, very stable casting platform and a seat, a nice, you know, boat swivel seat. So if it's a slow day, you can, you know, and you're running indicators or whatever the case may be, you got a place to kind of sit, and you know, you don't have to stand all day. A lot of people I know, it hurts their backs, you know, stand on those ladders for 10 hours.
Yeah, yeah. Huh. What happens when you get a big fish on?
Well, there's a couple options there, too. My personal favorite is scream like a girl and hope that somebody down the beach has a nice net to come net it up for you. But
coming out.
You know, usually guys have some pretty big nets. In fact, one of our best sellers, Adam's built, we build a big boat net. We'll talk to our salmon steelhead net, and everybody's using it for pyramid because the fish are so big. But, you know, a nice rubber-coated net with a big hoop on it. And, you know, most guys take at least one of the guys in the group. And a lot of us, when we go out fly fishing, we go together. There's two or three of us, 10 of us, whatever the case may be, and we'll be standing together and fishing, and somebody will get a big fish on and jump off the ladder and go help your buddy and get pictures and everything else. So that's.
So you don't try to climb down the ladder while you have a fish on, huh?
That's sometimes, yeah. It just depends on how big and how comfortable you feel getting on and off your ladder. I jump off the ladder and kind of meet somebody in the middle, but, you know, it just depends, like I said, how you're feeling. And how
I can just see a guy getting really excited up there with the fish on and falling off that ladder and taking a swim.
You know, misplacing a step. I mean, it's happened to me plenty of times on a ladder. I'm standing up there, and when you're standing there for so long, you start losing a little feeling sometimes. I mean, you start to move around, well, all of a sudden you get wobbly, and I've had to jump from the second or third rung down on my 6-foot ladder. Had, you know, start to fall and have to jump in a couple. I mean, more than once, that's for sure.
Okay, so once you're up on that ladder, what kind of strategies and tactics do you use to get a fish on? What are your methods?
You know, it just depends. Like I said, I usually have an idea of what's going on the lake, but what I like to start out with, I love indicator fishing with a balance leech out there. It's my favorite way to fish them, just because it's big, you know, big balance leech. Usually olive or black are my two go-to colors. And if there's some good wave action, it's like jig fishing for them. And so one of the things that we've done over the years is we actually take a pair of our forceps, clip them on our fly, give about a 10-foot drop below our indicator, and we actually underhand cast a fly rod out there to measure the depth. It'll hit the pliers actually go to bottom, and then you can see your indicator. If it's floating, you know you're too long. If it's under the water, you can see it. You know, it's under the water by a foot. Okay, that's about where I want to be. And so I'll run those balance leeches on an indicator about a foot off the bottom in the big waves, and that's one of my favorite ways to catch them. But I won't stick with it for very long. When I get there in the morning, I'll throw that. Sometimes a tandem setup works, where you got a balance leech on top and a little midge, you know, a foot below it. And kind of see what they're doing. If that's not happening, I go to my sinking rod and I start stripping a beetle. The old chartreuse on white popcorn beetle is
on the surface.
Is the absolute go-to there. I mean, it's one of the things you can always fall back on and catch fish, I think.
On the surface, the beetle?
No, it's on a sinking line. So Okay. The way I fish those, because they do float a little, is I put a kind of a short leader and a fluorocarbon leader as well, because it gets down, and then that beetle will be stripping right on the bottom. You'll be actually dragging that beetle just, you know, inches off the bottom, and they'll pick it up. Sometimes you can get it right in the dirt, and they'll pick it up right out of the sand.
Huh. Is it a, what is it simulating naturally? You said there are some bugs that look like it. Is it an aquatic, you know, underwater bug that you're trying
to
simulate?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
It's something in the lake that's weird that looks like that, and that's what it's simulating.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. Yeah, because, Arnold Kay in Los Angeles was asking about the balance leech, and then he has slash balance bait fish fly under an indicator with a slow retrieve or no indicator and a hand twist retrieve. So, are those both methods that work?
Both methods that work, and they will vary what they like depending on the day. I've actually had a couple days out there where I fished an olive balance leech with a little split shot under an indicator, stripping it as short and fast as I could strip it. But they wanted it out underneath the indicator. It was sitting just right for them or something. And then I've also had days. In fact, the last time I fished, we ended the day stripping balance leeches under a dry line, but with like about 18 feet of fluorocarbon leader as fast as we could strip it after we got it out there. So you can fish them both ways, and it just depends on what they want to see. But absolutely, yeah, it's deadly. It's deadly. And that kind of stuff works really well in October, November, and May and June.
Okay. Now, you know, you had mentioned trying to find a depth with the forceps and, you know, trying to be a foot off the bottom or so. Is that commonly where you're going to find the fish, or are they moving up and down that water column?
They move up and down. I'm kind of a stickler just because, I mean, I conventional fish a lot, and I jig a lot, and I troll, you know. I'm just a trout guy, and I love targeting that bottom area, like dragging flatfish on the bottom, jigs and flies and stuff, but it's not always the case. In fact, sometimes it isn't the case, and I don't do as well because I try to do that. A lot of times those guys, in fact, I would say the majority of the time, those guys put a midge under an indicator at 6 or 7 feet, no matter what it is, and they rip fish. So, yeah, they move up and down the water column. It kind of just depends on the weather and the day and that kind of stuff, you know.
So it's other than the beetle, midges kind of a go-to fly on the lake? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. There's times of the year, a lot of the times of the year, they won't eat anything else. If they're coming in shallow, they're looking for those midges. They're looking for those little bugs and stuff. And like I said, there's a lot of pyramid-specific midges tied just for out there that, you know, because they work so well. The albino, wino, patriot midge, there's just a handful of different colors that were designed for out there, and because they, you know, they really do well out there.
Rick Takahashi, who was also on our show a couple times, yes, he's in Fort Collins. He wanted to know, what is the entomology of the lake? So we've got midges. Any other bugs?
Damsels. Yeah, damsels? We get a good damsel hatch in June. That's what I think. You know, when we were stripping those all of balance leeches fast. I mean, I'm sure that's what they were eating was damsels. The midge hatch is amazing, but other than that, there's not a ton. I don't think there's a ton of hatches out there. I'm not too big of an expert in that field, I would say. And then the weird bug, like we were talking about, that the popcorn beetle, you know, simulates. But the two biggest things that I know of are the midge hatches that come off, along with the damsels late in the year.
Okay. And just kind of doubling back here, D.D. and Escondido, back to the ladders. He says, is there a place to get one on the way over there? Is there a local Home Depot or something that's nearby?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, if in Reno, you know, Reno's got a Home Depot and a Lowe's and whatever. You can grab
okay.
a... You know, if people are going to fly in, you know, that happens a lot. People fly into Reno because and rent a car because it's, you know, it's 30 minutes from the lake. You fly into Reno, it's an easy, it's a really easy do-it-yourself trip. And they go, they'll run and, you know, run to Home Depot and buy some 6-foot ladders and call it good. Absolutely.
A couple of questions came in on the internet here I want to run by you. Raymond Fairweather in Calgary, Canada, asked, what type of fly should I be using on the lake in October? He says 2 days fly fishing is going to be part of his honeymoon trip that includes several national parks and the desert trip concerts.
Well, first of all, let me just tell you that you're the man for scheduling it on your honeymoon trip. So
maybe she scheduled it. Maybe she scheduled it.
She might have. If it was my girl, she would have scheduled it. So, first of all, that's the most important thing, is I like that. But if you're going to be there in October, I would absolutely have a good assortment of bigger balance leeches. There's some guys that tie up balance leeches for the lake, but they tie them small. And I don't like the small ones in October. They're looking for big. You know, we're fishing them with 2-ounce minnow jigs that are, you know, 4.5, 5 inches long, you know, that time of year. So a balanced leech, but try to find some the biggest ones that you can find. And once again, if you need help, if anybody's coming over there and you need help, message me on Facebook. You know, send me an email. Go to wildfishwildplaces.com. My email's there. I'm easy to get a hold of. Get a hold of me. We'll try to get you as much help as you can because we want you to crush fish. So I would say bigger balance leeches and big streamer patterns. Big white, and what the bait fish look like out there that time of year is they've got a white silver body with a black back. So any dark back, white body streamer that you can find will be good. And you can't really throw them too big, honestly. Like we joke around about.
Are we talking 4 inches, 6 inches?
Yeah, 4 to 6. I mean, you could throw them out there 12 inches and catch a lot of fish. So don't be afraid. It's just a matter of what you want to throw, you know.
Okay.
How tired you want to be at the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly.
And make sure, too, that you bring a sinking line that time of year. And if you can, get some sort of float boat out there figured out.
Okay.
Because in October, they like that 50 to 60 foot ledge. So it's kind of a ways out. I mean, they'll come in, you'll get some shallower, but if you can get a float tube, you know, float tube on the honeymoon or, you know, something like that where you can just kick out a little ways, you're going to definitely have a lot better success.
Okay. Let me take another quick break, Dennis, and then we'll be right back and we'll finish up here.
Okay.
Keeney's Fly Shop in Sacramento, California features classes on all aspects of fly fishing. They have an extensive inventory and fly tying department and a friendly, experienced staff whose primary goal is your complete satisfaction. Among their many services, one can book private waters or take advantage of their international travel service. Visit their extensive website at www.keeney.com. That's K-I-E-N-E.com. Or call them at 1-800-400-0359. That's 1-800-400-0359. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Dennis Isbister about Pyramid Lake cutthroats. If you'd like to ask Dennis a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them on the show as possible tonight. I think we did have another question here that came in. I think you just pretty much covered this. Ken Barr asks, when the season opens in October, what do you recommend for fishing tactics? So we talked about a lot of leeches, big leeches at that time of the year. So I think we covered
that. Yeah, black, white, and green, I would say, are the primary colors. And then just make sure you bring lots of big minnow patterns. There's and they'll have them out there, too. There'll be some good ones out there. But like I said, if anybody needs info, get a hold of me. Fulling Mill Fly Company makes some really, really good patterns for that time of year. Big white. I think one's called the Bus Ticket. The Bus Ticket is white, and it's got a brown stripe down the back. And I think there's one more that they make that really, really do well out there. So.
Okay. Okay, good. Andy Cordova asked, and we've kind of gone over this, but let's just address it specifically. He says, does having a boat on Pyramid increase your opportunity of locating fish and getting away from the highly pressured areas? Or is ladder fishing still the best way to fish the lake? So that brings up a different twist of getting away from the other people.
Absolutely. I would recommend a boat. If you have a boat, but one of the things that I like to do that most fly fishermen either don't want to do or they don't think about doing, and this is actually one of the ways I found some of my favorite fly fishing areas in the lake that nobody touches, is I actually fish them conventional tackle. I'll troll with my electronics and my downriggers and my spoons and find fish that are working areas that nobody else, what better way to cover a lot of ground? But you got to definitely take some time and figure the lake out. And from that, you can go in. Well, then that also, if you have a big enough boat, you can access the other side of the lake. You can go to the east side. You can go to Hell's Kitchen. You can go to Anderson and Red Bay. And you can fly fish over there. Like I said, legally, I don't think you're supposed to get out on the bank itself. But right. You can position your boat. You can do different things on the other side with flies that nobody fishes flies over there anymore. So, absolutely, if you have a boat, do not leave it at home is what I would suggest.
Yeah.
And it also gives you, like I was saying, I always take my boat and my ladder. If you're going to be there for 3 or 4 days and you have really nice weather one day, we'll get the boat out and learn the lake, catch some fish, learn the lake. Well, then you might wake up the next morning and the wind's ripping 25 miles an hour. There's no way to put your boat on. That's a very dangerous lake. So that's the other thing. If you guys are bringing boats, bringing any kind of float tubes or anything, watch the weather. Do not chance it. It is one of the most dangerous lakes that I've ever been around. There's geothermal activity in the lake, and it mixes. The hot water mixes with the cold water. It creates these big swells overnight when there's no wind. And if it comes up, especially more towards the north end of the lake, the wind comes up on top of it, it gets really dangerous. It's just something you have to really pay attention to. So, yeah, boats are a great option for a few different reasons.
Do you fish any differently from a boat than you would from the shore?
Yes, I do. A lot of times when I'm fly fishing from my boat, I'll use my electric motor, and I'll work that 20-foot ledge, and I'll slowly go forward with my electric and strip fast, just strip big streamers fast. The other thing you can do, too, is you can fish the ledge as you would from a ladder, just from the other direction with an indicator and a midge. You just have to anchor your boat up, or if you have an electric that has an anchor mode to it,
Yeah. And you keep mentioning the ledges, and you said those are very visible and apparent when you're fishing?
Yes, yep, they are. The lake's very clear. And the entire lake has a ledge you walk to. Some places it's right. You just walk out a little ways and it's right there in front of you. And some places you got to walk out, 25, 30 yards before you get to it. But yeah,
so
the entire lake has
like waist level to what?
To 6-8 feet, and sometimes a little deeper. Sometimes it'll go from waist level, it'll drop straight off to 15 to 20 feet, and that secondary ledge will be, within casting distance. It's just sometimes some of my favorite places to fish. The places like the nets that they come into to spawn, they're really shallow, really far out there. So the primary ledge drops off, and it's only 7 or 8 feet out in front of you. And that 7 or 8 feet just gradually goes way out in the lake to 15 and then 20. And it's a long ways out there. But other places you fish that I like to fish, say Shot Dog or Monument Rock, depending on where you're positioning yourself, the first ledge drops off to 8 feet, down to 10 feet, and then the next ledge starts at 20, and you can cast to that 20-foot ledge, too, if you can, casting, say, just before you're backing, say. So a big cast out there, you can get to that 20-foot ledge.
Yeah. Now, in all these areas, is it all sandy bottom, then, on these?
No, not all. A lot of sandy bottom, but there is areas with the rock piles too. Tufa rock, which is what kind of rock you'll see out there.
Okay. Is there any other structure to the lake? If you're out in a boat and looking, as you would any other
structure? Absolutely. Yep. They're mostly you're gonna wanna focus on the ledges and stuff. But yeah, there's big points that run out. Warrior Point's a great place to, you know, to key in on. They run way out in the lake, and they've got big boulder piles on them. Shot Dog, there's big boulder piles, and out to one side, there's a 50-foot hump of rocks that come up that you can't see unless you have a boat or a fish finder. You know, there's a lot of that stuff around the lake. I would say if you're fly fishing, you're going to be working those ledges, you know, 95%
yeah.
of the time. But
Okay. Let's see here. Oh, one other question before we call it quits here. If you're going there for a few days, what's to fish in and around the area there? If you want to try, is it Truckee? What other areas?
Yeah, I would say that would be the only other option would be the Truckee River, depending on the time of year. But, yeah, the Truckee River, I mean, there's some stuff up in the Sierras you could target, but mostly all that stuff doesn't turn on until after, you know, Pyramid is turning off. So,
yeah.
If it was me, my suggestion is you come to Pyramid and you stick it out because there's no better fishing
it's
anywhere
worth it,
here.
Huh?
It's worth it. Yeah, if you're gonna come here, spend the time, and it turns off and on too. That's the thing. A lot of people get frustrated one day they'll get here and it's off, but you know you can. I mean, a perfect example. My buddy was at the nets this year one day and it was raining a little bit and kind of windy and I could not make it out there and he was texting me all day. I mean, he caught 35 fish by himself with some big ones in there. And I went the next day, and we didn't pull a fish, but, I mean, I think he caught one. So that's the difference, you know.
You just don't know. Yeah. Okay, well, anything else you want to tell us about Pyramid before we wrap things up here?
You know what? I think we went over everything pretty good, but everybody listening, like I said, if you need some tips, if you need some advice, if you want to know what's working, I mean, don't hesitate to get a hold of us. And, you know, we'll try to steer you in the right direction for sure. And we can point you in the right direction for gear, too. I mean, if you need, you know, you need those flies, you need a good fly line, you need, you know, rods and reels, boots, waders, any of that stuff, just don't hesitate to get a hold of us, and we'll point you in the right direction. So, you know, that's one of the things I always preach to people because we take people on our trips with us all the time. You know, we travel to all over the world, and we have, you know, spots that open up for people that love to fly fish and fish with us. And, you know, like just for instance, this Alaska trip we're going on in August to catch rainbows and char, we've got 9 people going with us. And I always preach, just like going to Pyramid, don't go cheap on the gear. You know, don't spend all this time and money and effort going on a trip, on a vacation, and trying to squeeze by with something that doesn't work quite right.
Yeah.
You know, get the
yeah.
stuff that you know. I mean, doesn't mean you have to spend a fortune, but make sure you get the stuff that you're going to be happy with when you're fishing there to enhance
yeah, you don't
your
have
experience.
That, you don't want to lose a fish of a lifetime for some crappy gear of some kind. Huh?
Right, or not be able to fish. You know, only
probably.
Be able to fish a few hours because you're uncomfortable
yeah.
or, you know,
yeah.
whatever the case may be. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, let's wrap things up. I want to mention before we close out here, stick with us, folks. We're going to be giving away that one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, a one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, and also a copy of Dennis's DVD, Unlocking the Secrets of Pyramid Lake by his production company, Wild Fish, Wild Places. So stick with us a few more minutes, and we'll give away those prizes, and we'll make a at least 3 fishermen out there happy, so stick with us. All right, Reeling and Healing Midwest is a nonprofit organization that champions fly fishing retreats for women surviving cancer and you know, battling all types of cancer. And their mission is to introduce women to the healing powers of the sport of fly fishing, providing one-of-a-kind experience on and off the water. And this is accomplished through the elements of fly fishing, positive camaraderie, peer coaching, nurture and support network, which in turn renews spirit and the hope of each participant. Reeling and Healing Midwest is in need of trout flies, waders, leaders, fishing equipment, and other items. To view their current wish list and to learn how you can support their retreats, visit reelingandhealingmidwest.org. So that's reeling and healingmidwest.org. or call them at 866-237-5725. That's 866-237-5725. Just a quick reminder to everyone before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, what did you think of the show? Just click on that link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. Now it's time to give away our prizes. The winners for our drawings are randomly selected from the show's registration database. If you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do so for our next show so you don't miss out on a chance at some of these great prizes that we have to give away. If you are the lucky winner, we'll contact you after the show and provide you with information on how to receive your gift. So first off, we're going to be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation Fly Fishers. And the Federation is, you know, a great, great organization to support. They do so much on the conservation level, and they deal with, you know, cold water, warm water, salt water, the whole gamut of things, and they do operate internationally. So go check them out, fedflyfishers.org. That's fedflyfishers.org. And let's see here. Who's going to be our winner tonight? Sam Brown in Ohio. Sam Brown. So congratulations, Sam. And I know you'll enjoy your membership. So congratulations. All right. Now we'll give away a one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. And that's published by AmatoBooks.com, AmatoBooks.com. Check out their other offerings out there. They've got other periodicals as well as books, a lot of books on fly fishing and so forth at AmatoBooks.com. And our winner there is Paul Dunlap. Paul Dunlap, and Paul's up in Washington. So congratulations, Paul. And great. All right, now let's give away a copy of Dennis's DVD, Unlocking the Secrets of Pyramid Lake by Wild Fish and Wild Places. So let me clear my queue here. And make sure that there's nothing left in there. Oh, okay, just a comment on the side here, Dennis, about our honeymooner. He says, thanks, guys. She can outcast me 100 feet. Foot cast easy, haha, but I outfish her. She's been pro staff for Amundsen, and she's as excited as I am about the opportunity to fish Pyramid Lake. We have great friends in Reno, and we're excited to take us out. Anyway, yeah.
Beautiful.
She might be better than he is.
Yeah, you did well there, buddy, and I got to say the same. My girlfriend just outfished me a couple days, king salmon fishing, and every other guy on the river. I think I don't think I caught a fish one day, and she caught seven. So, yeah, I'm with you there. So that's good.
Nice closing thoughts there. Yeah, good. Anyway, let's throw out a question there. I'm not going to make this too hard tonight. Actually, it's going to be a little bit different than I normally do. But if I wanted to go I want to do two things. I want to go get a beer and get some fishing information. Where would I go? Where would I go if I was out by Pyramid Lake? Beer and some fishing information. Usually the question's about, you know, something about the fishing. But they, you know, if I ask them your favorite fly or something, they all are ready for that one, so I can't use that. or what's the best apparatus to fish from, you know.
We're right. That's just too easy. We can't do that.
So let's see if anybody's got an answer for us here. I'm just refreshing the queue here and see what we can come up with. Nobody knows?
Nobody
knows. Was listening?
We only touched on that one once or twice.
One time, yeah, I know. Okay, if nobody knows, gosh, I thought that was going to be an easy one. Where was the fish found, the Lahontan strain, where did they find it? What state did they find it in that they brought back to Pyramid Lake? So if you get either one of those right, you're a winner. Oh, no. I have a feeling they're not able to answer for some reason. Let me check the home page here and see if the question box is still up. Oh, it's still up. Okay. Oh, here we got, that wasn't, we'll take this one though, probably. It's not the state he gave us, but where. And he said Pilot Peak.
Yep, that's
that
correct.
Place? Okay.
That's the one.
Ken Barr, you just got yourself a copy of Dennis's DVD. Boy, I didn't think that one was going to be that hard.
Yeah.
Who knew? Who knew? Okay, so Ken, send me, you can use the same box or, you know, on our homepage or send it to info@askaboutflyfishing.com. Send me your, I've got your email, I've got your name, just send me your mailing address so I can send that over to Dennis and he'll send you out that DVD. So,
absolutely.
Congratulations. Right. That was a hard one for some reason. Well, thanks, Dennis, for taking your time out of your busy schedule to do this for us. It was really
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's always fun talking fishing.
Yeah, always fun and easy, and I for one always learn something new, which is great. So thanks a lot for being on tonight with us.
No problem. You're welcome.
Hopefully, if you are new to our show and you haven't found the archive on our website, take a look. There's a couple links on our homepage and at the bottom of every page. Go to the archive. We've got over 230 some shows in there right now. Everything from trout to tarpon to carp to you name it, locations all across the country and world. And check it all out. Do a search. You've got a lot to learn out there, and I'm sure you'll enjoy the shows. Our next broadcast will be on July 20th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern. And on that show, I'm going to interview Matt Sapinski. And our topic for the show will be Spring Creek Seduction. Matt is the master of selectivity and even wrote a book on it. In fact, we interviewed him on the show not too long ago on selectivity, so you might want to check that show out. But he's going to be the one that leads us on a journey to understand how to fish spring creeks. And spring creeks, you know, will not only seduce you, but test your skills to the highest level. So join us to learn Matt's secrets to fishing spring creeks. We'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Amato Books, and Watermaster, Housatonic River Outfitters, for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company would benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-800-985-1673. Don't forget to visit our website, askaboutflyfishing.com, and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.